Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
Hello, 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 my friends. And welcome to another episode of Terror Radio Podcast. If this is your first time joining me, then welcome. This is a podcast dedicated in bringing you the best of horror and thriller, old-time radio broadcasts, as well as original stories. I am your host, Keith, a.k.a. The Radio Show Nerd. And today's episode is entitled Highway to Terror. So, without further ado, this is Terror Radio. The two radio series highlighted tonight are two new ones to the platform, True Detective Mysteries and CBS Radio Workshop. Now, True Detective Mysteries was based off of the True Detective magazine, and each episode presented cases of actual crimes. And once the presentation was over, if you will, rewards were offered to the audience for information or clues about said crime. Now, I wasn't able to find out when the series began or concluded, but I did find 8 episodes that were recorded in 1937. And the episode featured tonight is from 1958. So I'm not sure if it began in the 30s and ended and then was revived in the 1950s or if it ran for 20 years. Following that is CBS Radio Workshop. And this was an anthology series, an experimental anthology series, which ran from January 27th, 1956 to September 22nd, 1957. Now, this was a revival of earlier radio programs, the first being Columbia Experimental Laboratory from 1931, and the second being Columbia Experimental Dramatic Laboratory from 1932. The subtitle of the series was, and I quote, "Radio's distinguished series to man's imagination." Our first radio play is called Hitchhiking Cycle and was first broadcasted on True Detective Mysteries, June 8th, 1958. Following that is the radio play Grief Drives a Black Sedan, and this was first broadcasted on CBS Radio Workshop, September 1st, 1957. Now, you all know the drill. Sit back, turn down the lights, and listen to Hitchhiking Cycle, followed by Grief Drives a Black Sedan.
And now, True Detective Mysteries. In cooperation with the editor of True Detective Magazine and the Mutual Broadcasting System, True Detective Mysteries, brought to you by X-Lax, America's largest selling laxative.
Once again, ladies and gentlemen, $1,000 reward is being offered for information leading to the capture of a dangerous criminal. A complete description will be given later on this True Detective Mystery, which follows in a moment.
You probably know what you're going to do every minute you drive, but do the other drivers know what your plans are? In other words, do you signal your intentions to other drivers every time you want to turn, stop, or do anything else that might not be expected of you? Well, the law says you must. Your own common sense must tell you you should. Most cars today are equipped with mechanical turn signals. Use them, but be sure to use them correctly. If you use a turn signal for indicating your direction at the fork in the road, and you should, Remember that the turn may be so gradual that the signal may not turn itself off as many do after a 90-degree turn. Be sure your signal is off after it has served its purpose. There is probably nothing more frustrating and dangerous than following a car with turn signals flashing away and the driver blindly driving straight ahead. The National Safety Council urges every driver to use turn signals correctly, safely, at every turn. This message is brought to you as a public service. Now, the voice of the editor of True Detective magazine.
The case history you are about to hear is the actual report of an actual crime. When she was a little girl, she told police they used to have a saying, that what you didn't know would never hurt you.
I've kind of changed my mind about that. I didn't know John Nasser until a few hours ago, and even then I didn't know his name. But he hurt me. He hurt my husband more than anyone else ever did, and I hope more than anyone else ever will again.
This is Grace Hospital.
Again?
A young woman, Mrs. Mary Ann Webster. Oh. Slim but athletic, brunette and pretty. Courageous.
Being in that trunk. Oh,
very courageous, as you shall hear. Grace Hospital, room 18, emergency ward. In her own words, detectives, police steno near bedside, Mrs. Mary Ann Webster coming fully out of sedation now.
Robert and me, we've just been married a year. Robert's an engine mechanic in the Air Force. For the holidays, he managed to wangle a 10-day leave, so we started out for a Christmas visit with his people. And then my folks, and it was swell seeing them. Both sides, his and mine, and the presents and food and happiness and all. Then we got ready for the start back. I was wearing shorts and a sweater and a sports coat. Robert stepped on the accelerator, and we waved goodbye to the folks. I snuggled up to Robert, put my head on his shoulder. If I'd had any idea of what was about to happen, believe me, I not only couldn't have slept, I'd have run to the nearest police barracks. It was early in the morning, about 2 a.m.
Oh, hey, honey. Mary Ann, hey, there's a hitchhiker. Shall we pick him up?
Oh, well, there's not much traffic. He might have to stand all night.
Hey, you got room, folks? I'm going down the line.
Oh, hop in.
Ah, fine. What's your name?
Robert Webster. This is my wife, Mary Ann. What's yours, mister?
What's in the name? We're only ships that pass in the night.
I didn't hear you.
We're only ships that pass in the night. Were you kids just married? Hey, has anybody got a cigarette?
We've been married almost a year.
Here.
Ah, thanks. Somehow you remind me of a couple of honeymooners.
This sort of flatters me because we've been married a long time. Well, not long, I guess, but it seems like a long time. We've had arguments and everything already. If that sounds like Robbie and me didn't get along, I don't mean it that way. It's just that we weren't a pair of flighty lovers. We'd adjusted to marriage and felt like an old, settled-down couple. We drove along for about 150 miles. John smoked and didn't talk. I must have fallen asleep again on Robbie's shoulder.
Hood latches come loose.
Oh.
I guess we're near Sulphur Springs. That's about 60 miles this side of the city.
What do you do? John, the hitchhiker beside me, John, it pinched me. I turned around shocked. I saw he had a gun in his hand. I was terrified. Terrified. Robbie came back, and as he got in behind the wheel, John, the hitchhiker, pushed across me before I knew what he was doing.
Hey, what are you doing? You slept?
Robbie,
hey.
I didn't. Robbie, on me. Robbie, he's got it.
She didn't give you that love tap, Buster.
Hey, put that away. You out of your mind?
But you'll flip if you're not careful. Now, do as I tell you, or the long honeymoon's over, kid.
I tried to say something I couldn't. I sat. I stared at the gun in front of my eyes. The gun was aiming across me at my Robbie. I was paralyzed.
Oh, now, listen, we don't want any trouble. My wife's going to have a baby. If this will hold up okay, I got about 15 bucks. So take it and leave us alone. And take all the presents in the back seat. They're worth something, too.
It's not exactly a stick-up.
Well, take a car, too. I don't want my wife harmed. Did you hear what I said? I don't want her harmed.
It won't do. Traffic along here. Somebody'd pick you up and you'd have the cops on my tail in 20 miles. Just keep driving. Slow. Perfect. Like you're right out of driving school. Find a nice, quiet country road.
No.
Start the car up. Start it up! Go, I said!
Thank you.
Back to True Detective Mysteries in just a moment. One of the popular magazines coined the phrase, never underestimate the power of a woman. Well, to paraphrase that, saying, never underestimate the power of a man to help a boy. For the past 50 years or so, the Big Brother movement has been proving how true that is. A Big Brother is not a trained social worker. He's simply a man who's willing to give some of his time and energy and ability because he's concerned about the welfare of young people. He knows how much the genuine friendship of an adult can mean to a boy who's been emotionally battered and bruised because there was no one for him to turn to. And he knows, too, that there are few satisfactions greater than that which comes from helping a youngster over the rough spot. So if you believe that we should never underestimate the power of one man to help one boy, and if you would like to become a Big Brother, then please contact your local Big Brother agency or write Big Brothers of America, Philadelphia 3, Pennsylvania. That address again, Big Brothers of America, Philadelphia 3, Pennsylvania. This message is brought to you as a public service. Now again, the editor of True Detective Magazine.
Continuing now in her own words, the true statement of Mrs. Mary Ann Webster,
we were in
room 182, Grace Hospital.
My husband was driving again. My heart was pounding something terrible. I couldn't talk. I couldn't scream. I tried to once when another car flashed past us, but no sound came. I prayed.
All right. In there. In there, I said. Straight in ahead. Turn into it. Yeah, it's a bumpy road. A mile or so, you kids can get out.
If you'll get that gun out of my eyes, maybe I could see.
How are we going to get to the city?
I was going to drive the car to the city and leave it at the railroad depot. Now you've started arguing.
Who's arguing?
I changed my mind. All right. Out, soldier. I said out. Out of the car. Walk. Now you just stay in here and keep your mouth shut. Maybe that way you won't get hurt. Walk, soldier.
I watched him.
Do what he says, Marianne. He's not going to kill Marianne.
Oh, Robbie.
He's going to let us live. Marianne. Do as he says.
What's he going to do?
He's rushing for us both. Settle a band. I think he's insane. He just didn't kill us, so let's not give him a chance.
The trunk. We were locked in the trunk, but the car didn't start.
You let her alone.
I'll give it to you right now, soldier, to you both. Then I don't even have to carry bodies. You, I said.
Me?
Ow!
Robert in the trunk. I forgot my own terror. My Robert locked in the trunk. This man, he's been generous enough to give a lift this madman with the gun.
Get it. Now drive.
No, I don't care what you do. I'm not going to.
Get in the car. Drive me.
I want to be with Robert.
All right.
Get in, hon. Just get in. Oh, honey. Please, honey.
Jammed, we were jammed, Robbie and me, jammed up against each other. Robbie kept telling me to do exactly as that monster said, and eventually he'd let us go, but I don't think Robbie believed that he was just saying it to make talk for my benefit. Robbie put his arms around me and held me close. Oh, it sounds mushy now, I know, but we told each other how much we loved each other. It was the real thing for us. And we prayed, and Robbie tried to keep him from crying.
He's stopping for gas. He got my money. He said he'll shoot us and the gasoline attendant if we make any noise. Honey, easy.
He left the motor run. The exhaust fumes came into the trunk. It was choking me. It was unbearably hot. Then he started up.
Back to True Detective Mysteries in just a moment.
More families, far more families, use X-Lax than any other laxative. X-Lax is the preferred laxative for one important reason. X-Lax helps you toward your normal regularity, gently, overnight. Today, many doctors recommend trusted X-Lax for youngsters as well as grown-ups.
That's because X-Lax gives you the relief you want, the gentle way that nature wants, without upset, without embarrassing urgency. When you take chocolated X-Lax at night, it does not disturb your sleep. And X-Lax is so effective that the next morning, you'll be well on your way toward your normal regularity. Seldom, if ever, will you need X-Lax the next day.
Little wonder that of all the laxatives made today, tablet, powder, or liquid, X-Lax is the most popular. Next time, any time that you or any member of your family needs a laxative, make that laxative pleasant-tasting chocolated X-Lax. Introductory size, only 15 cents.
Now again, the editor of True Detective magazine.
Continuing the statement of Mrs. Mary Ann Webster.
Robbie was bleeding badly where he'd been stabbed with the gun barrel, his head and his face. He tried to stop the bleeding with an old pair of trousers he found in the trunk, but he couldn't make a very good job of it. There was a lug wrench in the trunk. Robbie got hold of it and tried to force the lid up a little so that we wouldn't smother. After a while, using the wrench and pushing his feet against the lid, he managed to spoon the lid up a little, and fresh air trickled in, and it was like champagne. Up until then, we hadn't had any hope of getting out alive. When we could see it was getting daylight, I twisted around and stuck my fingers through the crack under the lid, hoping, how I was hoping somebody would see them, my fingers. Robbie tried to hold the crack open, but he was weak from the beating he'd gotten, and the lid closed down tight again on my fingers. Oh, my fingers got pinched so badly they bled. Once the car stopped for what must have been an hour. Again, he kept the motor running. The heat, the exhaust, the fumes.
Open. Well, open up, Will. Open up, Will.
I could tell from the sound of the tires that we left the highway. Then from the tires, I knew we were back on the highway again. I didn't know what that meant. Robbie was unconscious. His head bobbing an inch from mine. His mouth was open. I could see his tongue, and every so often his eyelids flickered when we hit a bump, but that was the only sign I had that my husband was still alive. And the thoughts that ran through my mind of the many times I'd been mean and selfish and good. Oh, how so very good a man my husband was, and how, oh, Lord, knew how. And I prayed how I would be good and never nag and kick. Oh, Lord, if we could only get out alive. But I'd given up hope.
Do
as... Oh, yes, oh, yes.
Don't...
Yes, lover, yes.
Mary.
Oh, I can't get my fingers out again.
Here.
I'll try again, Robbie. You try to sleep. I tried. I was so cramped. Robbie was lying now against me. His weight. He was unconscious again, and his weight on me. I... Oh. Please, somebody, please, it must be other guys, people. Please, someone see my fingers sticking out there, please.
Hey, shut up.
Easy, young lady. That's what
I... My husband here.
Is he alive?
Then an ambulance clanged down the highway. Robbie was still alive, but I heard the ambulance doctor say something about severe loss of blood and possible monoxide poisoning because of the blood loss. And I must have passed out, too. But then I was here in the hospital, and you all are treating us so well, and I'll be all right now that I know Robert will live. Really, I will. You are the policeman, aren't you?
Well, yes, Mrs. Webster. Yes, lady.
I don't know how to...
Well, just you relax now. You lie back.
Could I ask you what you and all you detectives...
Sure. Well, his name is... He's a killer.
Mm-hmm.
Named Nasser. The John part was correct, ma'am. He escaped from State Prison Farm about 33 days ago. Overpowered a guard. Then he robbed and unnecessarily stabbed him. He's been serving a life sentence on a first-degree murder conviction. Yes, ma'am. Mm-hmm. Since January 1947.
A murderer?
Yes, ma'am. Yeah, I was actually out on a parking meter checkup, ma'am, and a man I know, Hal Fisher, he runs a tire store. Now, I was stopped there, you know, talking to Mr. Fisher. He's the one who actually spotted your fingers sticking out the trunk of your car. I appreciate you worrying at the time about him having a gun, ma'am, but you see, when I came up close behind you and I saw your fingers were running blood, I knew this was trouble, so I had my own gun out and pointing right for his head when I gave him the siren and pushed him over to the curb.
Thanks. Thanks again.
Oh, you betcha, ma'am.
Except for the use of fictitious names and places, this has been a real story of a real crime, solved by real people with a real criminal brought to justice. But be on the alert. A vicious criminal is at large and may be in your neighborhood. As editor of True Detective Magazine, I offer a $1,000 reward for information leading to the capture of Thomas Francis Connolly, Jr., 1 month from the date of this broadcast and as a direct result of listening to this broadcast. But first...
Planning a trip? Unexpected trouble can occur anywhere. Did you know that you can receive immediate, confidential help wherever you are throughout the nation at Traveler's Aid? Friendly, experienced Traveler's Aid workers will assist you with any difficulties you may have while you're away from home. Traveler's Aid is a non-profit, non-sectarian organization located on the piers and in transportation terminals in over 100 cities in the United States and Canada, and supported entirely by voluntary contributions from the public. Among its services are protective care for children traveling alone, the aged and the handicapped, and guidance and counseling for individuals and families on the move, as well as help on any job, personal or family problems related to travel. Remember, if ever you are in trouble, away from home, contact Traveler's Aid. A good suggestion. If you're in trouble away from home, contact Traveler's Aid. This message is brought to you as a public service.
And now, here are the details regarding the wanted criminal. Thomas Francis Connolly, Jr. is being sought by the Federal Bureau of Investigation on a charge of bank robbery. He is alleged to be one of four men who held up a branch of the Chase Manhattan Bank at Woodside, New York, early on the morning of April 6, 1955. Thomas Francis Connolly, Jr. is 32 years of age, 5 feet 9 inches tall, and weighs 175 pounds. He has blonde curly hair, blue eyes, and a fair complexion. The fugitive has the following marks of identification: a diagonal scar on the right side of his forehead, a scar under his chin, and another below his left jaw, a 2-inch vertical scar on the back of his left wrist. His previous occupations include steam fitter, floor waxer, bricklayer's helper, and merchant seaman. Connolly may be armed with a machine gun and a pistol and should be approached with caution. If located, notify Director J. Edgar Hoover, Federal Bureau of Investigation, Washington, D.C. Do not call your local radio station, but notify Director J. Edgar Hoover, Federal Bureau of Investigation, Washington, D.C. And get in touch with the editor of True Detective for the $1,000 reward.
True Detective Mysteries has been brought to you by Chocolated X-Lax, America's largest selling laxative. London, England. A woman notifies Scotland Yard she has nightmares in which she sees her friend walled up in a closet. Upon investigation, the dream is found to be a reality. The dead woman's husband is charged with murder. Read the complete story, The Corpse in the Cupboard, in True Detective magazine, now at your newsstand. And when you're getting your copy of True Detective, be sure to buy Sport magazine, the magazine for sport fans. Look for Carmen Basilio on the cover. Silos, haylofts, corn cribs. A farmer certainly knows how important it is to store food for the future. And when he has extra crop money, a farmer buys United States savings bonds regularly, too. He stores away bonds to protect his family's future, as well as the future of his farm through this safe, systematic way of saving.
Today, Series E savings bonds are a better investment than ever. The interest rate's been raised to 3.25%, and you get back $4 at maturity for every three invested. Savings bonds mature faster, too, in just 8 years and 11 months. Savings bonds also come in a new, convenient punch card form. They're smaller, about the size of a bank check. Don't put off putting something away. Enjoy a more secure tomorrow. Buy improved United States savings bonds today. True Detective Mysteries is written, directed, and produced by Peter Irving. The part of the editor is portrayed by John Griggs. Also heard were Pat Hosley and William Redfield. This is Ed Ladd speaking.
Penny, for those thoughts.
Oh, I was thinking I'm glad we're going home, Roger. I hope this summer has given us both ample time to think this thing out.
Well, actually, darling, we have too much invested in this marriage. 10 years cannot be dispelled by one summer.
Well, that isn't exactly what I meant, but... Oh, let's listen to the radio, shall we?
I hope we've had an end to this sulking and...
What was that, Roger? Felt like we hit something.
Nonsense, I ran off the road.
Oh, Roger, please, slow down. Roger, listen. Sounds like a woman screaming. Oh, please, please, let's go back. I'm sure you've hit something.
I didn't hear anything, Kay. I'm sure we didn't hit anything.
This is the CBS Radio Workshop, the theater of the mind dedicated to man's imagination. Our story, Grief Drives a Black Sedan, stars Alice Frost and Lee Vines, written, produced, and directed by D. Engelbach.
Should have gone back.
Kay, none of your hysterics now. Please, we...
I'm sure we must...
Oh, just be quiet.
You realize how fast you were going?
Yes, officer. I was going 40 miles an hour, and that doesn't really seem like an excessive amount of speed to me.
It is in a 25-mile zone. Although you can't see it from the road, this area is quite thickly populated. There are always children about. Can I see a driver's license?
Hey, Tom.
Hmm?
Look here a moment.
Okay.
Roger,
Kay, there's nothing these state police would rather do than to stop a car with a New York state license. And I was only going 40 miles an hour.
I'm afraid it's more serious than that.
More serious than what?
Move over, please.
Say, what's all this about?
I'm taking you to the police barracks in Westport.
What have we done, officer?
That's for you to tell me, madam. You see, your front left fender is dented.
Is that a crime in this state?
We'll have to find out. You see, around that dent is blood.
Captain, I'd like to see you in his office.
May I come along, Roger?
No, darling, you stay out of this. I'll find out what this is all about.
Roger, remember...
Stay out of this. I'll be back in a moment.
Sit down, please. You are Roger Wickens, 25 Park Plaza Road, New York City.
Yes, I am. What's this all about?
I'm returning your driver's license and your car registration. We've checked the New York police. You've not had any previous accident record. What happened tonight, Mr. Wickens?
What do you mean, what happened? I drove up here from New York City to take my wife home. She's been summering up here, and that's all there is to it. And I want you to stop treating me like a criminal. I was driving down Cross Highway when the police stopped me for driving 40 miles an hour.
Excuse me. Yes. Yeah. Well, keep checking. Check every hospital within 25 miles. When you finish that, check all the doctor's residents in the vicinity. Send someone to retrace Cross Highway. Yes. Well, I think you'll find somewhere, not too far from where the Wickens car was stopped, some blood stains and possible pieces of glass. Report back as soon as possible. Yes, who? Oh, Doc's out there. We'll send him in.
Captain, what about this? Are we under arrest?
Well, there are two ways we can do this. We can technically arrest you for driving 40 miles an hour in a 25-mile zone. Or of your own volition, you can wait until all these things check out. Look, I think you're in trouble. I think you've hit somebody and run away from the accident.
Of all the stupid things that I've ever heard of, I've...
Oh, hello. Hello, Captain. Okay, what is it? Oh, excuse me.
Hello, Doc. Well, what will it be, Mr. Wickens?
I'll wait. What about my wife?
Well, she'd better wait, too.
He seems rather touchy.
Yeah. Doc, why don't you take some blood samples, run them through the lab, report back to me as soon as you can. I believe this is a case of hit and run. I want to have all my facts.
Another no-cooperation guy, huh?
That's right, Doc. They never learn, do they?
Cigarette?
Thanks, Tom. Roger, did you tell them?
Tell them what?
Oh, please, darling. Remember when we ran off the road, I told you I thought I heard a woman scream.
Kay, I did not hear a woman scream, and I did not hit anything. This is all a fantastic nightmare. It seems it started when you came up here. There was no reason for all of this. We should have gone to Europe this summer and behaved like two mature people. 10 years of marriage, and we're still trying to figure out whether or not it will work.
It's not going to work, Roger. I believe this was all for a reason tonight. I believe we're both in trouble.
Nonsense.
Roger, we must share that responsibility.
Oh, for heaven's sake, Kay, what responsibility?
The blood on the fender.
Hello. Yes. You found what? Where? Bayberry Lane. Let me get this down now. Bayberry Lane and Cross Highway. Yeah, I'm a regular Sherlock Holmes. How'd I know what? Never mind about that. No one at the house, huh? Well, you stay there. Keep calling in. No, Doc's still working. There's nothing to report here. Wickens denies everything. Okay, stay with it. Ryan.
Do you want me to send out for some coffee?
Oh, no, thank you.
Well, it's past midnight. Eddie and Joanne said they would wait at the Maroc until 1. What a wonderful homecoming party this turned out to be.
Well, you win the superficiality award for the year. Eddie and Joanne, the Maroc, the whole stupid, silly pattern. Roger, don't you realize you may have killed someone tonight?
Kay, let's stop this. This bickering, this hammering at each other. I did not hit anyone tonight. Now, starting with that premise, let's see if we can discuss intelligently our own problems.
This is not the time nor the place. Actually, Roger, there is no problem. I'm leaving you. I don't blame you, Roger. I really don't know whose fault it is. Perhaps it's mine.
Oh, no. No, no, it's mine. All I've ever done was given in to every little whim you ever had.
Have you, Roger? Oh, yes. You've given me things. Money. A beautiful home. And, oh, so much loneliness. Good are possessions. Oh, I know this sounds trite and very cliché. But I'm tired, Roger. We've failed. I don't know whose fault it is. I don't know where we really started to grow apart. I just want out.
Well, darling, as usual, your timing is superb. I'm up to my neck in trouble because of you.
Oh, please. No more of the comparisons, no more recriminations. Until we know what's happened here, let's just wait. Wait. Wait.
Yes, Tom. You did. A signed statement. Feels pretty bad, huh? Yeah. What about the charges? Mine does. Hold it a minute, Tom. Paul, have Doc call me. Yes, Tom, you were saying? Hit about 10 o'clock. Dead, huh? It's too bad. Yeah, right. Doc, drop your test. We have all we want. Okay, Tom, get back here as fast as you can. Right. Paul, bring that Wickens guy in here.
It's 1:30. Roger, why don't you ask the captain if they found out anything?
Yes, I guess you're right. I will.
Mr. Wickens?
Yes.
Officer, what have you found out?
Mr. Wickens, the captain wants to see you.
Right.
Write it off? Can you forget it? 10 years and you look at someone, and that someone you've known for 10 years, and you realize, oh, this night, this long night, what have we done? 10 years. 10 whole years. What do you do with memories? Just lock them in a safety deposit box? Or do you tie them up neatly in pink ribbons and burn them? What do you do with plans? Those blueprints for the future? And what do you do with love? The community property of love. Split down the middle. And shared by no one. 10 years. 10 years. 10 years.
Okay.
Sorry, darling, I must have dozed off.
Yes, about an hour. Don't be sorry. I needed the time to think. Kay, I must talk to you.
Oh, haven't we had enough talk for one night?
Just a bit more patience, darling. A cigarette?
Roger, for heaven's sake, what's happened?
Kay, I must tell you this in my own way. And for whatever love you once had for me, please hear me out. I want you to know...
No, Roger, please.
I want you to know this is no plea for any kind of sympathy. I know, Kay, why our marriage failed. You see, believe me, this isn't easy. I know I'm a coward. Tonight, I did hit something. More than that, I took a life.
Roger, no.
Please, darling, let me finish this. All my life, I've been hitting and telling myself that I didn't hit. All my life, I've been running away. All my life, I've been a coward.
Oh,
I wonder how much I've lost in love, respect, friendship. I wonder how much of myself has been sacrificed so carelessly, so needlessly, because I didn't take time to stop. Go back to pick up that which I had hit. You see, darling, I guess I've always been driving 40 miles an hour in a 25-mile zone. And the ironical part about this whole thing is that the police were not going to arrest me for speeding, but merely warned me to take it easy. I guess maybe help of any kind has always made me angry, and truth always hurt my ears.
Roger, darling, would you please...
I know I killed tonight. Needlessly. Carelessly. And, Kay, I want you to hear this letter the captain just gave me. And I want you to know, darling, that no more do I blame everybody else for my emptiness. To the man who killed my dog, I hope you were going someplace important when you drove so fast down Cross Highway across Bayberry Lane tonight. I hope that when you got there, the time you saved by speeding meant something to you or somebody else. Maybe we'd feel better if we could imagine that you were a doctor rushing somewhere to deliver a baby or ease somebody's pain. The life of our dog to shorten someone's suffering. that mightn't have been so bad. But even though all we saw of you was the black shadow of your car and its jumping red taillights as you roared down the road, we know too much about you to believe it. You saw the dog. You stepped on your brakes. You felt a thump. You heard a yelp and then my wife's scream. Your reflexes are better than your heart and stronger than your courage. We know that. Because you jumped on the gas again and got out of there as fast as your car could carry you. Whoever you are, mister, and whatever you do for a living, we know you are a killer. And in your hands, driving the way you drove tonight, your car is a murder weapon. You didn't bother to look, so I'll tell you what the thump and the yelp were. They were Vicky, a 6-month-old Basset puppy, white with brown and black markings. An aristocrat with 12 champions among her forebears. But she clowned and she chased and she loved people and kids and other dogs as much as any mongrel on earth. I'm sorry you didn't stick around to see the job you did, though a dog dying by the side of the road isn't a very pretty sight. In less than 2 seconds, you and that car of yours transformed a living being that had been beautiful, warm, clean, soft, and loving into something dirty, ugly, broken, and bloody. A poor, shocked, mad thing that tried to sink its teeth into the hand it had nuzzled and licked all its life. I hope to God that when you hit my dog, you had for a moment the sick, dead feeling in the throat and down to the stomach that we've known ever since. And that you feel it whenever you think about speeding down a winding country road again. Because the next time some 8-year-old boy might be wobbling along on his first bicycle, or a very little one might wander out past the gate and into the road the moment it takes his father to bend down to pull a weed out of the driveway. The way my puppy got away from me. Or maybe you'll be real lucky again and only kill another dog and break the heart of another family. Signed, Richard Joseph, Westport, Connecticut. Well, Kay, that's it. No charges. No arrest. No.
Roger. Oh, darling. Please. Let's go home.
Ladies and gentlemen, the governor of the state of New York, Averill Harriman.
Thoughtlessness and irresponsibility go hand in hand and cause far too many tragedies on our highways. The thoughtless driver who ignores traffic regulations, hoping to get away with it, hides behind the idea, no witness, no crime. But too often, this leads down a road of final accounting. Only by constant care, courtesy, and observance of the rules of the road can you be sure of avoiding the day when grief drives your car and brings tragedy to your family or that of another. The streamlined, high-powered automobiles of today demand of us the same intelligence and care in handling that has gone into their design. This weekend and in the future, I appeal to everyone to drive carefully, drive safely, assure a happy holiday for all.
You've been listening to the CBS Radio Workshop, Grief Drives a Black Sedan, written by D. Engelbach. A Letter to the Man Who Killed My Dog is from the book of the same title, written by Richard Joseph and published by Frederick Fell. Today's cast, Alice Frost, Lee Vines, Ralph Bell, Bill Mason, Larry Haynes, Jay Johnson. Next week from Hollywood, People Are No Good. Ted Pearson speaking.
This is the CBS Radio Network.
That's the show for tonight. I want to thank you all for listening. And remember, you can find me on Facebook at facebook.com/terror1970. Or you can find me on Instagram at Radio Show Nerd. I also have a YouTube channel, Terror Radio. Please check it out. Like and subscribe. Share the videos. It will be highly appreciated. Again, this is your host, Keith, better known as the Radio Show Nerd, signing off.